in classic Bag of Pucks fashion, the guys do a season preview show after the season starts. That's the way we do it here. Fashionably late, just like what I'm like as a person. Jeffrey can attest, every single time we go out or do something, I will show up fashionably late. So the season preview show, fashionably late. But I got to give respect to Jeffrey, because you're going to get 90% of Alston tonight. 90% of talking from Alston tonight. You're going to get 100% of Alston's attention. Because Anson's not here and Jeffrey's sick, but Jeffrey still makes it because he's a trooper. So respect to Jeffrey, and we'll start the show proper.
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. So, we're trying to limit how much Jeffrey talks today because Jeffrey is sick. And we've decided we're going to go into the four divisions, talk about a few players that were like, huh, if I have all 30 games, all 32 teams playing in 16 games, which players am I staring at? Which ones do I go, maybe I want to go watch this game? And we're going to do that division by division. And because if you ask any part of Canada that isn't Toronto, who thinks they're the center of the universe, you will unanimously hear an entire country say Toronto. We're going to start with the Atlantic. Jeffrey, I see you have four players here. You want to talk about one of them?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're saying like, oh, center of Canada, but not Toronto, I thought you were going to say Montreal. So I think a big player that to watch is going to be Kirby Dach. I mean, third overall, like former third overall draft pick. We're going to see like, what is he going to be when he's over in Montreal? Like right now, he's kind of skating on the fourth line there, but I mean, he's probably going to end up on the wing. Like he hasn't been great on faceoffs. He's just signed a new contract. And I think, you know, Montreal paid quite a bit for this guy. So, you know, it's not good to see him already on the fourth line, but they've got a deep forward group. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Dach plays with Montreal. So I think he's definitely a player to watch. Is he going to do well? Is he going to do poorly? We'll have to wait and see.
I think it comes down to it, though. And the four centers available, right? Nick Suzuki is going to be the first line center. All right, simple as that. Dvorak, I think, and Monahan kind of split between second and third line center. Kind of leaves Dach as just there, right? Like, you're not going to put your, you know, guy who you're hoping to have a rebound year, and maybe if you can flip trade deadline, Sean Monahan, especially if he's doing well on your fourth line, right? Dvorak, I guess. But yeah, I'm okay with that. Maybe you get him fourth line, maybe put him some special teams minutes. Definitely a player you want to be keeping an eye on. Especially, I think, how long is Suzuki going to be out for? His day to day, I guess he's not going to be, it's not going to be an opportunity to be there for a long term. It should be like, hey, maybe slot up a little bit while he's there. Maybe not a regular season thing to be keep an eye on. But, you know, early in the season, because, again, we start recording after season starts. I'm curious about this year's first overall pick. Juraj Slafkovský. Is he even going to play in the NHL?
Like, that's the thing for me, right? Like, they've got such a deep forward group. Like, granted, there's not, like, an elite forward talent, maybe, besides maybe Caulfield, maybe Suzuki. I don't know what's pushing it, but, like, they really have, like, so many, like, middle six forwards that, like, really, like, if Slafkovský plays on the NHL side, like, it seems like he's probably playing fourth line minutes, maybe. Like, it's hard to see where he can play, where he can be successful, and, you know, having, like, good offensive zone times, playing with good players. I think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to come down to injuries where he's going to get pushed into a position where he'll be playing with the better players, and then that's where he's going to succeed in. I think that's the same thing applies to Dak, right? Like, basically, like, once the trade deadline, you know, Juan, Monahan, the Don off, all guys on expiring contracts, if they all get moved, then Dak gets some more playing time.
But I think it comes back to, right, do you think Slifkovsky makes the team? And if not, I don't even remember who the last NHL first overall pick who doesn't make their team right out of camp.
Yeah. Would that not be Ovechkin?
Okay, yeah. There you go. Maybe I think it is Ovechkin. But that's what, 04?
Yeah, well, that's the lockout, so I don't think it really counts. But, like, I agree with you. I think he makes the team out of camp. But does he stay with the team the entire season? I think it's really dependent on injuries. Like right now, if you look on Cap Friendly here on a nice Friday night, like, maybe he takes Pitlick's spot on the fourth line left wing with Dak and Evans. Like, that's not your typical fourth line. Probably that's a team's third line. But, like, will he get, like, enough time on, like, time on the ice to really help him develop? Or would he be better suited, you know, playing over in, say, like, back in Finland, or playing in the AHL, where he's going to get a bit more time to really, you know, hone his skills? So that'll be interesting with him.
Would you rather, as a fan, Slifkovsky, and I guess in a way you're invested in his growth, would you rather he play on the fourth line left wing, or play in either AHL or, you know, or Finland?
I think as a fan, you would want him to play in the NHL, even if he's 4 or 5 minutes, just, like, knowing the fact that, hey, this guy is playing on my NHL team. He's not, like, you know, quote unquote bust, right? Like, I think, like, if you're the first overall pick and you end up playing the entire season in the AHL, then I'm like, that's not a good luck. And I just realized there's actually a more recent first overall pick who didn't play for his team this season right after.
Oh, Owen Power.
Yeah, and that was the next guy I was thinking that, you know, maybe we should look at, right? Like, I think he had a pretty strong start last season, you know, 8-game cameo. You know, looked pretty solid, like, played some tough minutes, played some shorthanded minutes. He was sheltered a little bit, but wasn't, like, awful. I think playing with Joki Haru was really good for him. But, like, I always find it really interesting when you have two first round picks or first overall picks who were, like, very close in terms of age, and then end up playing the same position on the same team. Like, I think that causes, like, interest. Like if you look at New Jersey, right, with Heischer and Jack Hughes, you know, drafted 2 years apart, who is the true number one? Like, Heischer, I think, skills wise, like, that draft was a little bit weaker, so, like, Hughes is obviously better. But, like, between Owen Power and Rasmus Dahlin, like, who ends up being that number one defenseman for them? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Power adjusts to his, you know, realistically his rookie year in the NHL. And, you know, there's not many 6'6", 19-year-old defensemen who can play, like, all situations. So I think Buffalo's got a nice prospect on their hands. It's, will he reach that, you know, potential to be that number one? And will he even usurp Rasmus Dahlin?
I can't believe I missed Owen Power. If I understand correctly, doesn't Owen Power play left and Dahlin play both left? That can play left and right. Like, I mean, if you can have a Power Dahlin pairing that runs your first pair, that is elite. Like, you're not worried about that for a while, right? Like, I think, yeah, it's interesting. Whether or not he continues it. In terms of Buffalo, another question mark for me is Jeff Skinner. Last year, lit it up, you know, 63 points in 80 games. Previous 2 years, 38 points in within the 2 seasons. So I'm wondering, is this a one-season return, or has he figured it out, right? Like, obviously, you want to see players figure it out, and that's obviously ideal, right? But no one expects going from, you know, 14 games in a season and being considered done to tying your career high in points, right? Like, that's a flip of a switch that, you know, you're not expecting, especially for a guy like Jeff Skinner who has a high career total, right? So I'm wondering if he continues that. Buffalo is a surprising team that might, you know, I might watch just because there's so much possible high-end talent. You know what I mean? I think it's a team that you kind of just like, if you're playing, if you like to watch teams develop, I think this is a team that you can kind of put your eggs in the basket. Like, oh, this team might actually develop really well, right? They've got a lot of high-end talent that may not necessarily have played towards there, but you're kind of hoping they do, right? And what I mean by that is a guy like Tage Thompson developed, right? So he is high-end talent now, but a guy like Jack Quinn or Casey Mittelstadt, which have the potential to be elite, but just haven't figured it out yet. And I think especially in the case like Mittelstadt, you're 23. I think the World Junior hype got him a little bit too hyped. The expectations were a little too high. So I think, what do you want to share? Is he figured it out? Is he not? Right? I think that's a team that's really interesting for me. Another team that's really interesting for me is the Ottawa Senators, right? How do you not consider the Ottawa Senators? They make all the big moves. And the name I'm most interested about is Claude Giroux, right? Right now he's slotted for second line right wing. And I think people are expecting the bit of regression, but it's how much regression are you willing to take, right? It's a really nice story, kind of like Thomas Hertl playing in Prague today, scoring that first goal in front of the home crowd. Totally great story. And I totally see Claude Giroux doing the exact same thing, but in Ottawa. But it's as the season goes on, what is his role in this? And I think I'm most interested in the Ottawa Senators for this is because once you pass the second line, there is very, 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 very limited experience on that team, right? Like, if you look at the rest of the team past the second, like, beyond Claude Giroux and Scott Sabourin, the oldest player is 27-year-old Tyler Mott. If you take up the top four forwards, you have no one above 25 years old. This is a very young forward core, and I think there is a lot of expectation for this team. No one expects them to win the cup, but playoffs? I think this is like, they're what the Buffalo Sabres should be aiming for.
Yeah, I agree with you. Maybe I don't agree with the fact, like, okay, they're a young team. Like, maybe they might struggle, per se. But I think they have, like, a lot of, like, good young talent who, yes, even though they're not, you know, older than 25, they're not 30. They've got a lot of NHL experience already. So I think that there's a good chance that, like, that Claude Giroux, I think, just brings that calming presence. And I think he's put in a situation where he's going to succeed. So I don't think we're going to see that much regression from him. More so, like, I mean, he was a point of game player with Florida after the trade deadline. So, you know, you put him in positions to succeed, put him with good players like the Burkhead Stutzla. I don't think we'll see a change in terms of his production. In terms of, like, after that, like, that bottom six, I like Shane Pinto. If he's healthy, he'll be good. And I think they've got some sneaky depth there that could turn into something for them.
You know what sneaky depth looks like? It looks like bringing back David Krejci on a $1 million deal. That's what sneaky depth looks like. Like, Boston's on the opposite end of the whole cycle, right? If Ottawa and Buffalo are coming up, Boston is near the end of their cycle and they know it, right? So they've got an interesting team in the sense that if you look at their forward core on cap friendly, they have four forwards signed next year that are playing in the NHL this year. Right, they've got Pasternak, Foligno, Dzaka, Smith, Bergeron, Noshek, Wagner, Frederick, Krejci, all coming off the books next year. It's an interesting team. That's sneaky depth. I want to see how Krejci comes back after playing in Czech last year and doing really well, right? 46 points in 51 games. But again, it is the Czech Republic, right? Like, you got to keep that in consideration. I suspect this year, if he plays 82 games, he can get 50 points, 55 points. I think that's a reasonable expectation for him. Thing is, he just has trouble staying healthy, right? So if I think if you look at his past couple of years, I think he plays, what, 55 games, gets about 30 points. I think that's reasonable. That's an interesting one for me. The other interesting one is Brad Marchand, 34 years old, double hip surgery. That is concerning. I want to see how he returns from that. I think that's the other one I'm looking at for Boston. I don't know. Like, that's just a team where I'm looking at. I'm just saying either they absolutely crush it out of the park or they completely flop. And I could see both scenarios.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I think it's depends on how they survive without Marchand and McAvoy to start the season. Same with Taylor Hall and Matt Grizzlick. Like, if they can survive, I think, like, once those guys come back, maybe they'll have a chance to, you know, make a run at the playoffs. So, yeah, Krejci, it was very interesting. Like, I was on Cap Friendly, and I was like, where's Bergeron? Where's Krejci on this list? And you find him at the bottom in terms of, like, how much money they're making in terms of their cap. And yeah, like Krejci's at the bottom at like 1 mil and like Bergeron's at like 2.5. Like completely not where we're used to seeing them at like 6.5 or $7 million a year, right? Like it was kind of interesting to see them so far down. And you know, good on them to take like nice sweetheart deals. Like they're doing Boston a solid. And like you said, right, a lot of these guys are gonna be UFAs because I think this is like that one final run for Bergeron and Krejci. If they wanna resign, they're going to sign a whole bunch of other rentals, but I do feel like this year is going to be the last year for them.
Yeah, I think that's an expectation. When it comes to, you know what? I have no transition for this one, so I'm not even going to bother trying. You've got Spencer Knight in your list as well. This one's interesting. I think, what do they do, right? At the end of the day, $10 million for Bobrovsky for the next 3 years. You probably aren't going to be trying to hand the reins over to Spencer Knight this year. How much does Spencer Knight play? Right? He played 32 games last year. I don't know. Jeffrey?
Well, I think like that extension he signed is like the biggest thing. Like, I think it's very interesting, right? 3 years at 4.5 for a guy who's, you know, 21. You know, yes, he's, you know, played a handful of games, but last year was really his first year in the NHL, and that's a hefty contract. Like, the normal thing that we normally see with these goalies is, like, they sign to, like, little 1-2 year contracts, you know, let the team feel them out before they sign, like, I wouldn't say, like, a big boy contract, but, like, with signing, like, with a little bit more salary. And to me, this seems like a really risky move from Florida to sign. You know, Spencer Knight, really good goalie, you know, 13th overall pick. Like, he looks like he's going to be, like, a great starter. But, like, 4.5 for a guy who hasn't really proven that much to you, and you're, like, a starter in front of him in Bobrovsky, like, that's a lot of money that you're putting away on goalies, right? Like, that's a lot. Like, I'm assuming they probably had the highest cap hit percentage for goalies. Like, if they're paying two goalies like 15 mil, like that's a lot of money, I thought. So I don't know, I think it's interesting. Like, we'll have to see how Spencer Knight plays given that he has that extension. Like, will he take the reins from Bobrovsky, or will it turn out like this extension was a waste and maybe they signed this extension a year too early?
So have you noticed there's quite a few teams with really good forwards, really good defense, but just super questionable goaltending? And Florida's one of them. Toronto is one of them, right? With Matt Murray at 4.68 and Ilya Samsonov at 1.8, but not really elite goalies. And then there's Colorado, the defending champions, right? To a degree, I think teams looked at what Colorado did last year. It was like, Darcy Kemper's a good goalie, but he's not an elite goalie. I think previously, with Tampa winning multiple championships with a guy like Vasilevsky, it's like, oh man, you got to get an elite goalie. And then last year, Kemper being a okay goalie, not, don't get me wrong, he's not a terrible goalie, but he's not elite. And then you kind of go, oh, maybe you don't need a lead goalie, and you just load up on skaters as well. And I've noticed teams like Colorado, I think, is a question mark. You're taking a big gamble here, being like, I'm just going to run with a group of Georgiev and Frank Hughes, right? Frank Hughes is your backup, I think. Georgiev, not necessarily a good goalie like last year, right? Look at the 33 games, 898. Not exactly what you would expect for a team trying to win a cup if you looked at before last year, right? When you had the dominance of a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is interesting, right? Because if you look at it, yeah, if you had the Lightning, you had the Blues with Binnington, right? When he was playing very, very well. And I think that's another player you're like, does he bounce back this year? But it's interesting. I don't know what to expect, but maybe it's the changing of how they develop teams.
I think it's like where you're kind of focusing, like where are you investing your cap on, right? Like, do you need that elite goaltender, or do you just need a solid enough goaltender that can stop the odd puck here and then, but you got like good skaters in front of him, and that's where you're investing your money in. I'm assuming we've moved on to the Central. That's my guess. But I also remember the fact that Alston said that we're going to go talk about a couple of players per division. And when I'm not talking and I'm not leading, he goes off the hook and spends 20 minutes on the Atlantic. So this sounds like this is going to be a slightly longer conversation. But I think Georgiev can bounce back. I think you've got two goalies that have shown the ability that if they need to be the starter, they could. It's just not a sure thing. And if you're Colorado, I think you have to take that risk because, you know, you don't have all that cap space anymore. Like, you don't have like an elite team anymore. So you need to take a certain risk here. And the risk here is hoping that Georgiev can be that, you know, starter for them, man. Like, he's not playing like 70 games or anything. He's probably going to play like 45, 50. And I think he could be solid for that much.
Yeah. So you got your goalies, but then you've got your forwards as well. And, you know, I'm interested in the Minnesota Wild and Ryan Hartman playing 1C. He had broke out last year, and I think it gave Bill Guerin a lot of confidence to continue using him as a 1C. And I think to a degree, yeah, he's arrived as, you know, your 1C. But how does it change with Kevin Fiala gone this year, right? Last year, he had Kaprizov and Fiala as his wings. Two very, very electric, very, very quick players. And you're changing it up this year, and you put Matt Zuccarello in there. Can he sustain that, and how does it affect his point and production totals? I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, I think with Hartman, it's going to be interesting too. Like, I think me and you are both more interested in Erickson Ek than Hartman. Like, Hartman's a converted winger to center, and those experiments don't normally go so well. So, like, I wonder if maybe it's going to catch up to him, or I mean, like, you're not going to find another 1C who's getting paid $1.7 million a year. But, like, Zuccarello's not – I know you love Fiala because he's on the Kings now. But, like, Zuccarello, I don't think he's that bad of a player that he's going to hurt Hartman's value. Like, Zuccarello was a point-per-game guy last year. Like, I think he'll be okay, but I don't think he's going to reach, you know, 34 goals like he did last season.
So I'm interested because at one point you brought up, right? Hartman makes $1.7 million. That is probably, if he continues on that stretch, he's probably one of the best value contracts for this year and next year. Like, you're not getting a 1C for $1.7 million. And that's right. Like, he's broken up and it's trying to figure out what you want to do there, right? And another player I'm interested, if the breakout is for real, is Esa Lindell. I love Esa Lindell as a player. He's very fun to watch because he has that grit that Jeffrey knows I love. I guess it's not will he continue to break, it's if he will break. I think everything is in place for him to break out. He just needs to be healthy. I don't know. I think this is a year for Esa Lindell, and I know Jeffrey's going to be like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But you know what? I think this is the year for him.
You know how much Olsen loves Esa Lindell? He made me draft him in my fantasy league when he probably didn't need to be drafted. But, like, I don't really see it, right? Like, yes, he was always behind Klingberg, but now that Klingberg's gone, Heiskanen is the new number one. So I'm like, where does Lindell have the opportunity to break out? And, like, they're not even playing Lindell first-line minutes. I think their plan is to play Suter with Heiskanen. Like, I just don't see that Lindell breakout, especially at this age. Like, I think he's going to keep playing tough minutes. He's a defensive defenseman. This guy tells me, oh, yeah, Lindell's going to play power play minutes. He's going to get offensive time, and he's still going to give you hits and blocks. I'm like, you're only partially right. I think he's going to get me hits and blocks. I will guarantee you Lindell's going to be the first guy I'm going to drop on my team.
Okay, it's because Jeffrey now is against Lindell, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think Suter has the speed to run power play. But also, I personally, at 37 years old, you're probably going to start regressing, and you need the foot speed to keep up with Heiskanen. I think Lindell has that over Suter. And at the end of the day, that means Suter gets dropped down to second pair, Lindell first pair, breakout season, let's go.
Can we make a small little pride bet in that who's going to have more, who's going to average more power play time on ice, Suter or Lindell?
Oh, let's go. I am that confident in my boy, Esa Lindell. More time on ice than Ryan Suter.
Power play time on ice.
Time on ice.
No, I said power because play.
It's about how you break out and you break up time on ice. So that's the bet right there. Speaking of aging defensemen on different teams, I absolutely love the career move by Brent Burns to go to the Carolina Hurricanes. Jeffrey knows this because I was nagging the heck out of him to draft him for his fantasy league. I love it because he is probably, I assume he's playing with Jakob Slavin. A guy who is defensively minded. Brent Burns is basically, he was a forward, right? He was a right winger converted to defense. So you're getting a guy whose mindset has always been on offense, right? Like the metrics will tell he's not great defensively. So he gets to focus on offense. I think he's going to have a very good year. I'm not going to call it a breakout year. I'm not going to say a 37-year-old defenseman is having a breakout year for this age. I get it. But I want to see how Brent Burns can play when he has a very defensive-minded defenseman as his partner that isn't 35-year-old Mark Edward Vlasic.
How dare you call Jakob Slavin Jakob Slavin because you assume he's European. I wouldn't say Slavin's like a defensive defenseman, but he's a guy who can, you know, he's a do everything defenseman, right? Like he can, you know, play on the top power play if he needs to. He'll play on your top penalty kill. Like he's a do it all guy, and I think that, you know, reduces the burden on Burns both offensively and defensively. So I think this is a really good move. Like career move for Brent Burns. I think Carolina had a very sneaky, really good offseason. I know they lost Trocheck, they lost Niederreiter, like big losses, but like this is also a team that added Pacioretty and Brent Burns. So I think this could be a very, very good team and sneaky. Like I agree. Burns is not going to have a career renaissance, but maybe at least he won't be in the negatives anymore.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's an interesting look there. So, you know what else is? I don't know, man. Johnny Gaudreau somehow was second in scoring last year, 115 points. Like, I would consider that a breakout, but like I also wouldn't consider that a breakout because he's also had a 99-point season, right? So I get it. It's not a breakout, but he went off the rails. Are you a little surprised, or at least I was surprised, he couldn't get $10 million?
I think everyone's more surprised that he couldn't keep his 84 hut rating on Chell 23.
You know what? I'm not gonna go there. I think it's hilarious and stupid how McDavid got a downgrade. But you know what? We're not gonna go there.
Well, I think with Gaudreau not getting 10 mil, like he had a really good season, but right, like we're playing with a flat cap, well, basically a flat cap, and really teams could only offer so much money. So, like maybe in a different world where there's a rising cap and teams had more money to spend, he'd be a $10 million player. But, you know, he's still making good money. I think it's just going to be interesting to see. Like, Columbus seems to have, you know, really poor projections. Everyone thinks they're going to be, a bad team. So, I'm interested to see, like, can Gaudreau, can he turn that around? Like, turn around those projections that have them finishing, you know, bottom half of the Metro or... I'm assuming we've moved on to Metro. I'm very mad at you for only picking two Central teams. I feel like after we went through like 10 Atlantic teams, we've really disrespected the Central. But you know what? We'll keep moving on. Follow your lead. But with Gaudreau, I think it's going to be interesting. Like, I don't think he's going to hit 115 points, but I would say Laine hits at least 40 goals this season.
That's a hot take. Laine, 40 goal scorer.
I think when you're going from Voracek as your main assist man to Johnny Gaudreau, I think
underrating Voracek, man. You're underrating Voracek. Voracek had, if I remember correctly, a lot of assists last year. He had 56 assists last year. I mean, that's a reasonable amount.
It is, but I'm also like, okay, like the quality when you're going from a guy like Voracek to Gaudreau, I think it is quite a bit. And like, I'm just trying to see like how often, like Voracek was Laine's second best line mate. Like, I'm just curious. Like, I feel like he could do a lot more. And I think also on the power play, Laine is going to get a big boost when you add Laine to like. If you replace Bjorkstrand with Gaudreau, I think that power play is going to be a lot better and a lot stronger. So I could see Laine hitting. Maybe it's hot take. Maybe we have to ask Anse whenever he comes back. Does he also agree that Laine hits 40 goals with Gaudreau on the other wing?
Yeah, no, I could see that. Speaking of wings, Kaapo Kakko and Lafreniere have not developed as planned, right? Like, as much grief as I've given Jeffrey for the Montreal Canadiens for being unable to develop players, I think that's kind of flown under the radar a little bit, how Kaapo Kakko has 18 points in 43 games last year and 17 points in 48 games the year before. Like, the development just has not been as good as expected, right? And I think that's somebody you want to keep an eye on. I think especially when you look at his draft class, right? Like, in his draft class, there are guys who are performing, like, you know, well, right? And like, again, like guys like Moritz Seider, right? Like Bowen Byram, you know, like Dylan Cousins, Trevor Zegras. Like, there's guys who are playing well. It's very hard to name someone a bust at 21 years old. And at the same time, with the pandemic the last couple of years, kind of stunting a lot of development. Now, we'll talk that in a bit, but there's a little bit of concern there, right?
Well, that's why I've always had this concern when teams who aren't, like, near the... Like, right, the Rangers were never, like, at the very bottom, right? Like, they won the draft lottery. That's how they got Lafreniere. That's how they got Kakko. But when you're having teams that, you know, aren't truly at the bottom, they're teams that have, you know, established players already, they don't have that development opportunity for these top draft picks, right? Like, if Lafreniere was getting to play, you know, top two, like top six left wing on a developing team, he'll get plenty of ice time, he'll get advantageous zone starts and everything. But here in New York, you know, he's got Kreider and Panarin in front of him. So that kind of screwed him over. Like, he hasn't been able to develop because he's getting the third best opportunities because of the other two lines. And look at Kako. I think it's a little bit different because there's not really as much people standing in front of him, but he just hasn't seemed to mesh well with either of, you know, Kreider, Panarin, even like Zibanejad. Like, Kako's going to get a chance this year to see if he can, you know, play in that top six. But I feel bad. Like, I think, like, if Kako and Lafreniere were on a team with less established players, I think they would have developed into, you know, the potential that we all saw when they first got drafted.
So, speaking of make it or break it, though, Carter Hart does poorly again this year. Like, he you can kind of, like, the name that I tie closely to is Martin Jones. He reminds me a lot of Martin Jones's career, where a couple of good years and you're like, oh, maybe this is the future. Then all of a sudden you find, like, oh, no, I was wrong before. Like, two bad years in a row. Third year, if he's bad again this year, you got to at least consider maybe he's more suited for a really good backup, you know, or a really bad starter, which is, I think, what he's at right now. Right? Like, I mean, again, I bring up Martin Jones because I'm looking at the years he was starter. He has three good years of being a starter, and then the last 4 years of kind of in that tandem being very questionable.
Well, I was actually thinking about a different former Philadelphia Flyer goalie, Steve Mason, another guy, you know, won the Calder his first year. And then after that, he just couldn't, you know, freaking stop pucks. Like, he couldn't keep his GAA under 3. Like, the reason why I put Carter Hart as a player to watch is because, you know, the Flyers are going to suck. But I think if we can see Hart not be the reason why the Flyers suck, I think that's going to be good to see in terms of development, you know, that, you know, he isn't a fluke. Like, he's got potential to be, you know, a true starting goalie. So I think that's why I put him on our list of, you know, players to watch. It's just, you know, they're not going to be good, but it'll be nice if Carter Hart was, you know, I don't think he's going to be the solution, but at least as long as he's not part of the problem, I think that looks good for the Flyers' future.
A player you're expecting to be part of their team's future and a good piece to kind of continue their growth, Nazem the Dream, Nazem Kadri. I'm wondering how he produces this year without an elite first line center. I'm not saying Elias Lindholm is bad. He's just not Nate McKinnon, right? 95% of it, I'd say more, like 98% of NHL fans would tell you, yeah, McKinnon's better than Lindholm. It's not a very controversial, you know, take. With that in mind, and Nazem being, I guess, a second line center now, right, and for a second team in a row, is he going to be able to produce at the same level without the level of sheltering? And it's not on purpose, right? It just happens to be for most teams, hey, Nate McKinnon's out, let me put out my best defenseman. And it's a very clear-cut decision, right? For, you know, Elias Lindholm, who's maybe not as good as Nate McKinnon, you might have a few more coaches be like, all right, maybe I want to save my top defenseman for that second line, right? Because it is a very good second line too, right? It's trying to figure out what's expected there. And at the end of the day, can he translate that loss of protection in a way and still produce that level, right? At the end of the day, long-term contract, he's expected to perform at level.
I was going to say, I think he's going to be able, not, I don't think he's going to have another career year, but like I would say, you know, if he plays a full season, 70 points is not too far off the mark. But I don't think it's going to be because, you know, was he sheltered in Colorado? A little bit. But I think when you're playing with the elite defensive core, I think that's what really, you know, jumped off the page. The fact that his defense could get the puck up to him in transition, you know, they had, you know, really good puck possession. I think that's what Kadri, like, really benefited from. And you look at Calgary's defensive core. I don't know if you would argue maybe the second best defensive core, like 1-6 in the NHL. Like, I think Calgary, no, they don't have a Bowen Byram. No, they don't have a Cale Makar. No, they don't have a Sam Girard. But I think they've got really solid defensemen that I think it'll let Kadri do his thing on the offensive end. Like, he was never supposed to be, like, I think when you they drafted him 7th overall, I think he was always an offensive player, but he kind of was slotted into almost like a, oh, he needs to be a two-way guy. And, you know, he's still got two-way skill, but I think people assume that his main role should be defensive, not offensive. And with Colorado, I think he was able to show, like, you know, if he's got solid defense behind him, he can, like, really show that offensive output.
So, yeah, we've talked about players expected to be, you know, they have to bounce back. We have players who we've talked about, will they continue this streak? I want to bring up a player who's kind of been out for a while, is coming back, who has come back and played a few games. I think this is their first healthy season in a long time, and I want to see how they respond to it. And that player is Jack Eichel, right? Last 2 years combined, he's played 55 games. And he's performed, don't get me wrong, but can his body handle the rigors of playing an 82-game season?
I think that all comes down to conditioning, right? Like, that off-season prep, is his body, like, ready to play? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, an 82-game season is a long season, but I don't know. I think, like, in terms of you saying his body is holding up in terms of those injuries, I think he's successfully shown, like, you know, he's overcome the recovery from his surgery. But, I don't know. I'm not too worried about him, I would say. I think he's in a good situation where he's going to perform. But definitely that level of conditioning does he have. You know, is his body ready to play an 82-game season?
Yeah, and if it comes down to that, right? Like, is his body ready to play 82 games? If not, they do have Chandler Stephenson. But at the end of the day, you always hope that he's going to play 82 games. Again, I have one more player in the West, and Jeffrey is acutely aware that I haven't brought up any Kings, and I'm going to leave his best for last. Question for me is Quinton Byfield. He's kind of in the Alex Lafreniere camp. High pick, kind of stuck behind two elite centers, right? So Philippe Deneau, Anze Kopitar. Philippe Deneau had a career year last year. I think had his his career high in goals last year, 27 points. 27 goals, sorry. It's elite for his goals. Assists kind of down a little. Not going to talk about it, but he's kind of stuck. I think Byfield it's in a weird spot, right? You know, like Deneau, 27 goals, highest of his career. It's a breakout in my mind, you know, a career year in terms of his goal scoring ability. But if you look at a guy like Quinton Byfield, it's very hard the last couple of years to be a high round pick just because of COVID. Development was kind of stunted, right? The AHL wasn't playing, right? Like, it's, the OHL was kind of weird. It's very hard to develop the last couple of years. And now he's kind of stuck behind two elite centers. I think the plan, obviously, is to move him to that second line in an ideal world. Deneau move down to that checking line where, at the end of the day, he's an elite defensive center, right? And you want to make sure that you can maximize that in the checking role. But does he take the step up next year? And I think, is he put in a position for that? I'm not sure. I think that at the end of the day, that's a name I'm very curious about, if he can actually put it together, right? Like, he's got multiple wingers that can be a good option, right? This year, he's slotted to play with Alex Iafallo. In years past, that's the first-line left winger right there, right? Before Kempe broke out last year, Alex Iafallo, he was the one who slotted to play left wing. And this is, again, this is a team I'm just very excited for as a fan. Like, you have to be very excited for it. If you look at the left, Kempe did really well last year. Trevor Moore had a career year. Jeffrey wouldn't consider the Deneau year a career year, but you got to consider Trevor Moore's season last year a career year, from career high of 23 points to 48 last season, right? That's a definite career year. And then on the right, you brought in Fiala. Velarde, bit of a question mark, but on the third line, you have Arthur Kaliev, you know, a guy who has, I would say, is very light version of Patrick Laine. Very good goal scorer. Very, very, very good goal scorer. Very good shot. Not the best defensively. but, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of good wingers. And will that help Byfield and ease the pressures off Byfield a little bit to not necessarily have to focus on that offensive side of the game, especially when you have a guy like Kaliev who will get you those goals? Focus on that defensive side. Become, you know, a Deneau light, very light. I am using the light term very heavily, very lightly here. But I'm just curious where that development goes from there.
Like, I agree with you. I think that LA really improved their winger depth, both like internally and externally. Like, right with like Fiala, I think that pushes down a couple wingers. But the fact like Trevor Moore showed up to be like a good top six winger, like, that was a little bit of a surprise. And, you know, I don't know when Arvidsson's coming back, but I think that again also improves the winger depth. Like, they've got a lot of options now to play with Byfield. And I will disagree with one thing. I think if you're LA, you're hoping Deneau isn't going to be a Deneau light. You're hoping he becomes a supercharged Deneau, right? Like, this guy was a second overall pick. Deneau, I agree, great center, but I think when you're getting a second round, a second overall pick, you're hoping he doesn't end up being maxing out as like a defensive center who's probably got a ceiling of a 2C, right? Like, you want a supercharged Deneau, not a Deneau light.
Yeah, no, I, you know, you're right. No, you're fully right. That was all the players that I had on my list, and mostly for your list. Any players that you kind of looked at and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about this player.
I forgot that Ben Bishop still plays for the Buffalo. Well, sorry, he's contracted by the Buffalo Sabres.
He's LTI retired.
Yes. No, I think there's a lot of exciting players to watch. The one thing I always hate, so as we've previously mentioned, I joined fantasy hockey this year. And the one thing I hate about when you join fantasy hockey, or if you're in Canada and you play the Tim Hortons pick, you mainly watch the games of the players that you have. Like, if you did Tim picks, you're only going to watch the games where, you know, you pick certain players, or, and same with fantasy, right? Like, you're only going to focus on those guys. And I feel like there's so much to watch this season. There's so many intriguing teams that I want to be able to give each team its fair share of attention. But I know, because I shouldn't have joined fantasy, now I'm not going to be able to enjoy the games as much when I'm, you know, watching like Montreal versus Toronto and I have Austin Matthews. I'm like, oh, I want you to score a hat trick. But, you know, I also have Jake Allen in it. So I'm like, what do I want? Like, do I want Jake Allen to, you know, leave the net and, you know, let in less goals and just let Austin Matthews score empty net goals, so that doesn't affect my GAA and save percentage? I don't know. I think it always puts people in a bind when you have fantasy teams and fantasy players.
Yeah. That's all I've got for this week. We're going to keep it light, but we made a 50, made a almost, not even close, but we made a longer episode, which is, oh, well, I'm not going to complain. Yeah, I made Jeffrey talk a lot, even though he's sick. So hope your voice isn't totally shot. But you know what? Too bad. I'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks, Jeffrey. Does that sound good?
Yeah. Well,
there you go. You heard the cough. I think that's Jeffrey's son that he's calling it. So we will talk to you guys in a couple weeks, and we love y'all. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.